Welcome to the Writer's Weekly Podcast, a forum geared toward the writing enthusiast and those who want to make money from their writing. I'm Brian Whidden, Managing Editor of Writer's Weekly, and I'll be your host along with Angela Hoy, the creator of Writer's Weekly and President and CEO of BookLocker.com, a full-service book publishing company. Whether you want to learn how to become a professional writer, how to find writing gigs, or even publish your own book, then you come to the right place. We'll be discussing all kinds of topics relating to the writing and publishing industries. Don't forget, you can also click over to writersweekly.com. There, you'll find not only thousands of articles about professional writing, you can also find current paying markets and job listings to help you boost your writing career and even your bottom line. But for now, let's get on to this episode of the Writers Weekly Podcast. And welcome back to another episode of the Writers Weekly Podcast. I am Brian Whidden, and with me is Angela Hoy.
Hello, everybody.
And today we're going to be talking a little bit about the print publishing process. We'll get into that in just a moment. Let's start with the news from the home office.
Mm-hmm.
Last week we had some bad news.
Yep, bad news.
Last year we started out with six hens and a rooster.
Mm-hmm.
We got them all from our neighbor just up the street, and we're now down to three hens.
Yep, they're dropping like flies.
Or chickens.
They're flying the coop.
Well, they're not flying the coop. They're being
removed.
Hey,
one flew the coop yesterday.
That is true. That is true. we've been experiencing some predator problems, and it started out while we were free-ranging our chickens.
Mm-hmm.
What did we lose? We lost two hens while we were free-ranging.
Yeah.
Or was it three?
We lost one in the beginning, and then we lost two in one day.
We lost two in one day.
Yeah.
And then, so we started just keeping them in their enclosure,
mm-hmm.
which is surrounded by predator wire instead of just regular chicken wire.
Yeah.
But when I built it, I didn't bury that wire. And
lessons learned.
The latest attack, it appears that...
Can I say it?
You can say it.
A fox got in the hen house.
There
was a fox... I'm going to keep saying.
A fox got into the enclosure. We actually got a call from our neighbor right next door that said, hey, you got a dead chicken in your yard. And that property line is on the entire opposite end of the property from where the chicken enclosure is.
Yeah.
And I started heading out there, and I didn't get halfway, and I could recognize it's way too big for a chicken. It had to be Randy the rooster.
Which we've written about Randy on writersweekly.com. We've posted pictures. Our beloved Randy, who
there is a reason we called him Randy.
Yeah, and I'm sure all of you understand. And we loved Randy, but we never got too affectionate with him because we could never catch him.
You couldn't catch that.
No, we tried a few times.
He was quick.
Yeah, and plus he's got those spur things that you warned me about. Yeah.
But those spurs didn't do him any good this time.
Yeah.
But after I picked up his body, and it had clearly been fed on, I went back over to the chicken enclosure and checked and found a pile of feathers inside the chicken enclosure, and then followed a trail of feathers down into the woods.
Different colored feathers.
Yeah, it was from a hen, not his feathers, I'm sorry. And what I surmised happened was that a fox got in there under the fence, and I mean, not much of a hole dug underneath. Apparently, it really squeaked. I don't know how it did it, but got the chicken, left, and I think Randy actually flew over the enclosure because he had done that just the day before.
Just the day before, he flew over the enclosure and came and stood by the front door and was...
You were sitting in the spare bedroom working,
mm-hmm.
and you call out to me like, Brian, the rooster's on the front porch. And I'm like, he can't be. He's in the enclosure. Right there.
It was hilarious because Brian went out the door and he started walking towards the chicken coop, and usually the hens and Randy will follow Brian like the Pied Piper. And this particular day, Randy was leading Brian back to the enclosure.
Yeah.
because apparently Brian was like an hour late giving them the mealworms or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
I hadn't gotten out there yet to give them their scratch and a handful of mealworms. So he actually escaped.
Came to knock on the door.
And got on the front porch
and made his
presence known. And no sooner did I open that door, he started trotting back there. Mm-hmm, so yeah. I would follow him. And I just opened up the gate. He walked right back in. He's like, feed my hens.
That was a good final memory of Randy. Yeah.
And we're not like, this isn't like when I put my dogs down, a couple of years ago. That kills me every time. I've had to put, two dogs down in 10 years from disease and old age. And that hurts. Randy, it's like, I'm not in tears over him, but I wish it hadn't happened.
I have a scar on my arm from the time we tried to catch him, and he got me with one of his spurs. So really no love lost there. I did feel sorry for the hens because, they really seemed to like him, except, when he was being Randy.
The hens, when the hens got killed, it was like, oh, dang, a hen got killed. Mm-hmm. It was frustrating, I felt nothing. But when Randy, it's like, oh, no.
They didn't have names.
Well, we didn't. Yeah, we didn't name any of those.
The hens didn't have names. Yeah. We named Randy.
Well, that's because I couldn't tell any of them apart.
Oh, well, I know. There's like, all the black ones were called Black Betty, and all the other ones were called Bertha, the red ones. So they all had
chicken.
The same. Yeah. But when we first got the hens, I refused to name them. And I refuse to get close to them because they are farm animals and they don't live very long.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to get attached.
Not to mention, eventually we will probably eat them if there's any left in the next couple of weeks.
Right, if we have any left.
However, we did decide because when a rooster mates with a hen, that hen stays fertile for like a couple of weeks. So we collected up eggs over the next 2 days, and then I went back over to the neighbors, and they happily gave me a bunch of their eggs from that day,
including a blue one.
And those neighbors own Randy's father.
Yeah.
So same bloodline.
Yeah.
So either we're gonna hatch some chicks that were sired by Randy or by Randy's father, and hopefully one of those 12 eggs that were incubating is going to produce another rooster for us. So stay tuned for that. We'll keep you up to date.
Yeah, we'll post this week on Writers Weekly, we'll post a picture of the incubator. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, Angie, tell us about Writers Weekly Marketplace.
Well, today's episode is about the print publishing process, whether you're going with a traditional publisher, whether you're self-publishing, whether you're vanity publishing. We're going to talk about the processes for these. A lot of authors need an editor even before they approach an agent. I mean, if your writing is really, really needs help, you might want to get it professionally edited before you approach an agent or a publisher. And at marketplace.writersweekly.com, there's a link to called Editors. And those are all native English speaking, United States based professional editors that we have personally vetted. They've all edited books, of course, and we have received rave reviews from our authors about them over the years. So marketplace.writersweekly.com, click on the editors link, and we will post a link to that underneath this episode.
All right. So, Angie, you get lots of correspondence from potential authors, and even people, even after they sign up with us, they'll start telling you how nervous and afraid they are because they don't know what to expect. They've spent, months, maybe a year, maybe years writing out this manuscript. It may be something they wrote years ago and put it in a drawer, and now they're going to take that big step of publishing it. And they're scared to death because they have no idea what's about to happen. And I would also point out that if they don't know what's about to happen, this is one of the reasons a lot of people we're seeing people getting scammed because they don't understand what that process is.
Yeah.
We're not going to go into scammers today, but if you know the process, it's easier to kind of judge whether somebody's talking truth to you or not and what your price points ought to be. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about that author anxiety?
That's what we call it, author anxiety. I hear from authors all the time. It's either they write to ask me questions, whether they're going to go to booklocker.com or looking for a traditional contract, and they are nervous for a variety of reasons, but primarily seems to be that they're nervous that once they put their words out into the world, they're going to get some negative reviews or negative comments. And I can tell you that even Stephen King gets some one-star reviews on occasion. So it's something you just have to put on your big girl or boy pants and get your words out in the world. And if you get some negative reviews, well, join the club, because every author does. It's nothing to be afraid of. But another part of the anxiety is, you know, when we publish a book, we go through, you know, we have specific steps and we know them like the back of our hand, and we guide the author through it and make it as painless as and carefree as possible for the author. So we know what we're doing. However, when they come in, they don't understand what's going to happen next and next and next. What happens between submitting a manuscript and picking up a package from UPS on your front porch one day that has the first printed bound copy of your book? What happens? That's what we're going to talk about today.
Okay. And so as an intro to that, let's discuss a little bit about traditional publishing versus self-publishing.
Okay. Traditional publishing is, if you're going to get a true traditional publishing contract, one of the big ones, you're going to want to get a literary agent first, because the big ones will only accept from agents. Mm. If you're going to do that, you absolutely must go to the Association of American Literary Agents. That's aalitagents.org. We will also put that link under this episode. There are, I know you said you weren't going to mention scams, but I have to mention this one. There are thousands of fake literary agents pretending to be legitimate literary agents that are getting authors all worked up, charging them money. If you get a real literary agent, back in the day, the only thing, because I had a literary agent in New York, the only thing I ever had to pay her before I got my traditional contract through her was for copying fees. It's like 15 cents a page back then. They don't even do that anymore because everything's done electronically. Any agent who wants to charge you even a penny is somebody to avoid at all costs.
Basically, if you're a good agent, you should be able to get that person's book to a publisher, or at least look at the person's book and know that it's going to be able to be sold to a publisher. Mm-hmm. And that's where you're going to make your money as an agent.
Right.
Is it successfully getting somebody's book accepted by a major publisher?
Right.
So to say, well, you're going to just pay me for being your agent and I can't guarantee one thing or another, that's not somebody you want to work with.
Well, and this is also part of the author anxiety. A lot of people don't know that when you land a real traditional agent to get you a traditional contract, they're not going to charge you anything up front. Mm-hmm. But if they've got really nice letterhead, which of course always comes through email now, and they are very well spoken or well written, and they play the game right, they can convince some unknowing, uneducated authors that what they're doing is normal. Is trying to sell authors, publication license. You have to get a license to get your book published. That's total BS. Mm-hmm. It's a fake license. I saw an email yesterday. This company, literary agent, was trying to sell an author 6 different licenses. License to use your name, License to revoke all previous rights that were granted to anything in your book to any other company. I mean, boy, they just pulled this stuff out of the sky. So, and another thing that the fake literary agents do is they refer you to a publishing company that they also work for that's going to charge you fees. You're never getting a traditional contract through those. So, aalitagents.org. I trust that company implicitly. And don't move forward without somebody from that organization if you're going for a traditional contract.
And this company does not pay us in any way or ask us to endorse them or anything.
No, this
like
is
that.
This We're, is not an advertisement. Yeah. This is a website that I trust and I refer authors to all the time.
So in a way, I think you could you could equate this to kind of like a real estate agent. Is you would not hire, quote unquote, a real estate agent that asks you for money up front for them to try to sell your house.
Right. Very good analogy.
You would hire a real estate agent with the understanding that they will get paid when they sell your house.
Yeah, they get paid when you get paid.
Yeah. So same thing with a literary agent. You're going to hire somebody that agrees that they will get paid when your book gets purchased by a or published by a traditional publisher.
Right, contract signed with a traditional publisher.
Okay.
Right.
So that's your big difference, is you're not paying to get your book published by a traditional publisher.
Right.
So let's go to self-publishing.
Okay, the other two are self-publishing and vanity publishing. A lot of people confuse them. They really are the same. Okay. Because even if you're, quote, self-publishing, you're paying your own editor. You're paying your own cover designer. Of course, if you can't do all these things, you're still paying money to get your book published. Vanity publishing, same thing. You're paying to get your book published. And I've never had a problem with the term vanity publishing because, you know, a lot of authors are vain. So,
well, it's kind of a derogatory term, but it's true. You have to believe in your heart that the world needs to read what you wrote.
Yeah.
And I think that's a high level of confidence, not necessarily vanity.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing that makes a fighter pilot climb into a jet fighter and travel at, you know, 600 miles an hour because he knows he can.
Right.
And he knows very few. It doesn't make him arrogant. It just makes him very confident.
Speaking of arrogance, there are writing groups online of traditionally published authors who are very arrogant, who you might run into these when you're trying to get your book published and you're trying to find services you need or trying to figure out traditional publishing or whatever. And you will read very derogatory statements about authors who pay to get their books published in any way, shape, or form. And the fact is, getting a traditional publishing contract, it's a far easier to win a lot of money in the lottery. It's just, your chances are so remote that you're going to land that contract. If you want your book out in the world and you want people reading it and you want to earn royalties from selling it, then you really have no choice but to self-publish. Well, and
Angie, I think right this minute would be a great time to state the average number of books that are published every year in America.
Well over 1 million books are published every year now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's your competition.
Right.
Right there.
Yeah.
That's how many people are already putting books out.
So, and almost all of those are self-published.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just really hard to land a traditional contract.
It is hard to get
because those
big publishers are looking for the best of the best. They're
also
a million books.
They're also looking for the celebrity authors.
Yeah, well, that's true because that's what brings in the money.
Yeah. They will. Yeah. Somebody sent me a statement. I read it today. And he said, you know, I wrote a really good book, but the big houses are only interested in publishing a book about Kim Kardashian's shoes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically, absolutely. It's really turned into, it's not like it used to be, you know.
Well, I'm a big war history freak, you know, I've read some amazing, amazing books written by Vietnam veterans about their time in Vietnam and what they experienced. Mm-hmm. I was riveted, couldn't put it down. But these guys, nobody knows who they are.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many copies they sold, but I loved reading their books because they're not a big name. But, you know, Kim Kardashian writes some book about what she thinks of the latest, you know, shoe style or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, oh, yeah, she's going to sell a million copies because everybody wants to know what she said.
Well, we're just using that as an example. As far as I know, I don't think she's actually written a book about shoes.
No,
but that author brought up a very funny, Denny. I was like, you're exactly right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Stephen King could write a book about spitting into a well and a million people will buy it. Because Stephen King wrote it.
Well, because they're going to wonder what's going to come out of that well.
Well,
after
exactly.
He spits
yeah,
in it.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that your book, and I'm talking to the audience, isn't a great book, and that you might not find people And a lot of that has to do with marketing.
For example, completely unknown author. Mm-hmm. Never heard of her before 3 weeks ago. And she actually wanted to hire me to edit her book. And I don't edit many books, but I looked at this book and I started reading. I'm like, oh, yes, I will definitely edit your book. I was absolutely fascinated. From the first sentence, I was hooked. I spent all day Saturday on probably the first 160 pages, I think. And then, yes, I do edit very quickly. And her manuscript was in pretty good shape anyway. And then I had to force myself to save the rest of the book for the next day because I didn't want it to be over. And again, this is a completely unknown author. And at the end, she kind of put like this, you know, epilogue, and she told how everybody ended up in their lives. And I said, no, you need to remove that epilogue and you need to create a cliffhanger for a sequel because I want more. I wasn't asking for more editing work. I just wanted to read more of her writing. And and this is also a very fast moving book, and it could definitely be a movie. And I don't say that often, by the way, movie scams. They're all scams, book to movie stuff. But that's just one example of an author who really deserves to be read.
Yeah.
And nobody knows who she is. So.
All right. So now that we've gone all over
off the
place,
rails.
Let's talk about step number one. You submit a manuscript to a publisher.
Or a literary agent.
Or a literary agent.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so first of all, your manuscript needs to be as clean as absolutely clean, completely clean, no errors. You need to, whether you're approaching a literary agent or a publisher, you need to follow their submission guidelines to a T. You have to do exactly what they tell you to do. Don't deviate from that. Don't assume that, you know, you deserve special treatment because trust me, they've got their slush piles are huge. The slush piles are now all electronic, but back in the day, the slush piles were these inches and feet of paper stacked up on desks. That's gone. So you're going to want to find either publishers. There are smaller publishers that are traditional publishers, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Or approach literary agents, and you're going to submit your manuscript, and then you're going to sit back and wait. And one of two things is going to happen. You're either going to get an acceptance or you're going to get a rejection. You're probably going to get many rejections.
Mm-hmm.
If you're self-publishing, be very careful out there. Listen to our podcast 1 and 2. Just trust me. It's a nightmare for authors right now. When you find a legitimate publishing services company like BookLocker, you're going to have to still submit your manuscript. Now, a lot of them will accept anything and everything coming over the e-transom. Okay, they will publish anything. Some of them are selective. Those are the companies you want to go after, the ones that are selective, because they offer they only put good books on the market. Your book won't be surrounded by books that might embarrass you. We actually have an article on Writers Weekly. Brian, make a note about the librarian article. We'll put a link to that under this episode. There are bookstores and libraries who refuse to sell books that were published by Amazon KDP because they have put so much trash on the market.
Let me ask a question if I could here. What are the most common formats for manuscripts now that we're in the computer age? Because I know you've actually received scanned images of typewritten manuscripts.
Yeah.
The days of mailing somebody a big old package with your typed manuscript on paper are over.
I still receive those, by the way, primarily from prisoners.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Well, a lot of those are handwritten.
We call them jail mail.
But if I'm a new author and I've, you know, written this manuscript, what do I want to? Are there particular formats that are best? Is it per each publisher? How does that work?
The old double spaced everything is no longer something. That was back in the day where you would mail an actual print manuscript to a publisher or an agent, and they would be able to make notes between those lines. single spaced Microsoft Word file. That's my preference. I don't. If I need to make notes, I can. Well, I'll be making notes on my spreadsheet about that book anyway. So, and
let me throw some at you and get your comments.
Okay.
Word Perfect.
No, hardly anybody uses that program anymore.
PDF.
If you're concerned about. A lot of authors will submit a PDF file and they'll put, you know, password protected, or they've got it where you can't print it. There's lots of programs online where people can go in, open up a PDF file, strip all that text out. You're just wasting your time if you think that's going to protect you. PDF files, regarding the formatting process, the text doesn't flow from one page to the other, nor the one line to the other. So no, PDF file is no good.
Pages.
Pages. Yeah, because and
that's
yeah, I can convert that.
Apple,
yeah, I can product, convert right? that. Yeah.
Okay.
Text only is fine too.
Text only.
Yeah.
Okay. So WordPad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
WordPad, right. Notepad doesn't look too professional, but it works.
But eventually, like for us, we would wind up copying all of that, putting it into a Word document, so that we can then work
do the
it
formatting
and do
yeah.
the formatting. Do you think there's any preference when you consider all the publishers out there? Is there a preference over PC versus Mac, or is everything so integrated now that it doesn't really matter?
Vast majority use PCs.
Okay.
I can accept Mac files. There's a Microsoft Word for Mac that is actually fully compatible with the Microsoft Word for PCs. Now, that wasn't always the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, oh, I wanted to mention InDesign.
Oh, that was what I was thinking.
InDesign, okay.
Well, now, wait, InDesign I thought was a...
It's a design program.
Yeah, design program,
okay.
Yeah.
One of our gals, Charlene, she works on our color interior book. She uses InDesign. God bless her. I downloaded InDesign a few years ago, and I had met my technical match. My nerdiness does have a limit. So I... That program was way beyond my, it was a nightmare. And then I deleted it and found Charlene.
And so. I would dare say, if you're still using Microsoft Publisher, get with the modern age.
Right. I mean, yeah.
That was actually a very good program in its day.
Google Docs.
I liked it. Google Docs.
You can save those as Microsoft Word files.
Okay.
Yeah. So that one's okay. Okay. All right, what's next?
So you submit your manuscript and...
Okay, so your contracts, you got a contract, and you're ready for the publisher to start working on your file.
Okay, let me stop you there.
Okay.
So the contract is actually going to be like the first thing, is you have to sign that contract with that publisher agreeing for them to do all this work.
Right, yeah. Right.
Just so it's not... They do all the work and give you your product file, your production files and all that stuff, and then you sign a contract just before the book goes out. It's a contract for the work that publisher is going to do to get that book on the market.
So it's, you submit your manuscript for consideration, then you sign a contract, and then you submit your sort of final manuscript to the publisher for them to work on. Now, if it's traditional publisher, in most cases, they will send that to their editorial team and it'll get edited. Big red flag is if you get that manuscript back and there's more errors in it than you sent it off with.
Mm.
When I was published with my co-author by St. Martin's Press, it took 2 years for that book to get to market because the, quote, editor kept sending me the manuscript with errors in it. And I would fix the errors and send it back to her, and she would edit it again and insert more errors and send it back. It was a nightmare. Mm. Absolute nightmare. My co-author told me at the time, and I don't know if this is true, that editor lost her job after our book was published, she darn well deserved to. Also, be careful if you have gotten into bed with the wrong publisher or publishing service. If you get your manuscript back and realize it was clearly edited by somebody who doesn't speak English as a first language, you're in big trouble.
It's time to run.
Run. Yeah, yeah, drop everything and run. Not getting your money back.
Okay, so you upload your manuscript after you've gotten your contract.
So then if you're self-publishing and it's already you've already edited your book, or you've hired an editor, or maybe you're the publishing service does offer legitimate editors, the manuscript will be edited and then it will be formatted. So when you get back the formatted file, it looks pretty cool. It mm-hmm. looks way better than a manuscript. It's got title page, copyright page, it's got ISBNs, it's got whatever images you wanted in there. All the chapters are formatted just perfect. There's if there's a table of contents, it's all automated. What you get back looks like a real book, and it's pretty authors are pretty excited at that point.
Can you explain why that manuscript must be quote unquote formatted? What are we doing in that process there?
Well, the printer has specific specs.
Okay.
Of course, we have to format to that, but we also have to make it look professional. So let's say I've got an 8.5 by 11 double-spaced Microsoft Word file. I'm going to shrink it to I've got other people here that do this with us, for us. Shrink it to the book size that the author chose. Mm-hmm. And so set it up that way. Title page, copyright page, ISBNs, page numbers at the bottom, headers at the top, which are typically the book title and the author's name. Correcting any glitches that we see, like if there's a broken line of text on a page or something. But yeah, what we send back, it looks like the real thing.
When you first taught me manuscript formatting, I was shocked to find out there are actually like invisible characters.
Yes.
Embedded in these things that you have to know these tricks to see those things. Otherwise, it'll mess up the printing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the author didn't even mean to put them in there. It's just some kind of weird glitch with programs, I guess. I don't want to specifically say Word, but it happens in Word, but I'm sure it happens in others.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So then the author gets their formatted manuscript, and if it's been edited, that, you know. And then in our case, we send the file directly to the author and let them make their final edits, changes, additions, whatever. We don't charge them extra to do that. That's just one step of the process.
Okay.
Some self-publishing services make it more difficult for authors because they found another way to get money out of them. And this is a large company I'm referring to. They send the file as a like password protected PDF file, and the author actually has to type out the changes that they want made, which is ridiculous because the author could just make the changes themselves. And so if you run into that, well, that's a big pain in the butt. So then if it's traditional publishing, you may be going back and forth with the editor a few times. If it's, you know, self-publishing service, you make all your changes. If there's things, you know, in our case, if there's things you can't figure out yourself, you just send the file back to us and you say, hey, Allie here, she does a lot of our print formatting.
Allie, not Ali.
Right, Allie. She's a chick.
She's actually a girl.
Not a
Middle Eastern guy.
I know. Yeah. Everybody assumes it's Mr. Ali. Anyway, and they'll say, hey, Allie, can you do this, that, and the other for me? I can't figure this out. And she'll make it all happen. Then, you know, if a lot of changes are made, you know, we might send it back to the author again, and they'll send it back to us one or two times. And then when we're pretty sure it's set in stone, we do the PDF conversion, and we delete like the errant headers and footers from like blanks pages and the title page, the copyright page, etc. While this is all going on, mm-hmm. we've also got our cover designer working on the side doing the cover design.
Yeah.
And the author is communicating directly with the cover designer to ensure that the author is completely happy with the process. With traditional publishing, you probably aren't going to get any say in your cover design.
Really?
The publisher is going to say, we know what's best, like it or lump it.
Wow. Okay.
Yep.
And I might also mention, because I'm one of the people that does these, Clayton also handles it, you'll be communicating with the person that designed your book trailer.
What's a book trailer?
That is a video that basically it's a little video advertisement of your book.
Yeah.
So that you can post this. We actually posted on your Book Locker book page. When people go to booklocker.com and see your book, they'll also see your book trailer. We also upload to our YouTube channel. Then we also provide that person with an MP3 file that they can upload anywhere they want.
Right. So, they own it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a fun process too.
And traditional publishers also make book trailers now.
Yep.
And many publishing services offer it. So it's a very standard service in the industry
yep.
now.
Yep. Okay, so let's see.
I thought of another thing.
Okay.
Also in the background, Allie is applying for the library conduct control number.
That's true. Yep.
And sometimes that office gets a little backed up, and she actually obtained a personal contact there, and she can poke that lady and get what we need when they get running behind.
And I know we do copywriting services. Is that
copyright
just something we automatically do, or is that an extra?
That's copyright registration.
Okay, copyright registration. So.
And that, we wait until the interior and cover files are finished because the Copyright Office, Library of Congress, requires us to upload those files to them.
At this point, I think I would just point out, so basically, based on everything we've talked about so far, and it's going to be a little bit different for every publisher, but mm-hmm. for us... For the author, it's really just a matter of checking your author account daily for messages we send and just following the instructions.
And if you're working with another company, checking your email and making sure they're not going into your spam folder. That's why we have author accounts in our system mm-hmm. because spam filters, especially at the large ISPs, mm-hmm. cause major disruptions in legitimate business communications.
But basically, it's just a matter of you sit back and let the publisher take it from
there. Take the reins.
And
yeah.
whatever they need, they're going to let you know.
Yep.
And
yeah.
then you just follow the directions, or you tell them your concerns or what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a back and forth. So it's not a scary process. We really kind of hold people's hands and walk them through it.
Oh, we definitely do.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, you know, we know it like the back of our hands. This is what we do all day, every day. And this is what legitimate publishers and publishing services companies do all day, every day. So authors should not get author anxiety over this process because the publisher knows what to do.
Yeah.
And they're going to guide you through it. And if you start to get lost, you know, just ask them for help. And if they don't help you, well, you're at the wrong place.
There's never a problem with writing a message and just saying, man, I am completely confused. Help me understand what's happening.
Right, right.
So once they get the manuscript is all sorted out and it's ready to go, we've converted it to
PDF. The authors approved it.
I'm trying to formatted it. We formatted it, converted it, all that stuff. There's a POD final form. That's what we use.
That's what we call it.
Send to people.
Yeah.
I'm sure every publisher has its own version of this. And basically they answer some questions based on what they want on their marketing pages.
Metadata.
Like yep. Metadata.
Basically it's a form. You fill in the blanks. It says your name, your pseudonym, if you're using a pseudonym. If you don't know the final page count, we'll stick it in there. Don't worry about it. We give them a list of the BISAC categories, BISAC, and they choose three categories for their book. That's the maximum that is allowed in Ingram's system.
And those are basically categories that help people search for books.
Right. After the interior file is finalized... we also send the final page count to the cover designer because he needs to make the spine width correct. At that point in time, the cover's already designed, the author's approved it, and he just needs to tweak the spine a little bit to make sure that happens. While that's happening, the author's filling out that form with all the metadata information. Once we get that cover from the cover designer... And I'm assuming this is how pretty much everybody does it, and we have all the information we need to put that book on the market. We will send those files to the printer and set it all up in Ingram's system. Ingram is the largest book distributor, and they're the ones that send an automated feed to thousands of online and physical bookstores. And all these stores just pick up the feed, and that's how you find your book on thousands of websites. Most people buy from Amazon, but... The printer, within a couple days, will print and ship the very first printed bound copy, and we have them ship it directly to the author. So the first printed bound copy is sent to the author, And the author is expecting it because we've notified them that it's coming and that they need to let us know if it's approved or if they find additional changes they want to make. Even traditional publishing. Well, once a traditional publisher gets that print book done, they are probably not going to let the author make any changes at that point. So let's assume the first printed bound copy of the book arrives at the author's house and they're happy with it. The publisher's happy with it. Everybody's happy with it. And then a little invisible switch gets flipped in all the computer systems and that book is put into production and distribution. And that means that you'll start seeing that book pop up all over the internet and for sale. And basically that's the last step of the publishing process. And then it all turns into sales and distribution, which the author won't have to worry about either if the company's doing their job, of course. A lot of authors don't want to get into doing their own sales and distribution because it's a big pain in the butt.
it almost becomes a full-time job.
Yeah.
I know that one of the questions we get asked a lot from authors is, will I find my book in my local bookstore?
The fact of the matter is the market is saturated with new books every year. Bookstores are already full of celebrity books, mid-list titles. Mid-list titles are books that just never go out of style. Children's books, of course. Classics. Lots and lots of classics on the shelves. When you walk into a bookstore and there's a table right by the door with a bunch of books stacked up, chances are publishers paid premium fees to have their books positioned on those tables. The truth of the matter is the vast majority of people that hear about a book buy it from Amazon. It's far more important that your book be on Amazon.com than it is for your book to be in a bookstore. Funny story, when some local bookstores, they're interested in having local authors be on their local author shelf. Yeah. So you might have luck talking to your local bookstore and asking them to do that for you. We lived in Bangor, Maine, population maybe 75,000 at the time. And my book had just come out from St. Martin's Press and walked into our local tiny, tiny little bookstore there.
Yeah.
And they had 6 copies of my book on their shelf.
That must have felt pretty good.
And I went to the clerk. I said, this is my book. And she said, will you sign them all for us? I said, of course. First time I ever actually, you know, signed a book. But that was over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And things just don't work that
things
way
are different
anymore.
Today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So ebooks.
Oh, after. Now, some companies may do it in a different steps or mix up their steps a little bit. But we wait until the print files are completed and approved by the author. Then we start the EPUB conversion process. And that's the ebook format that all of the ebook retailers accept. Even Amazon accepts EPUB now. Mobi is just not a big thing anymore. That's a completely different step of the process, but it usually goes very quickly. And we or any publisher will put those up on the major ebook retail sites like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Google Play, Kobo, Overdrive, Apple. So those are the big ones. And again, just like print books, almost everybody buys their ebooks from Amazon.
Yeah.
That's just where everybody goes now.
What can somebody expect time range to get their book from start to finish, getting it on the market?
It is much faster to self-publish or vanity publish, which again, I consider both those one and the same. For example, well, as far as I know, we're the fastest on the market, but there are companies that are pretty quick too. We can do it in a month. If you go to a traditional publisher, it's easy 1 to 2 years.
Wow.
That you're not selling any books because, you know, it's not on the market yet. However,
is that just because they have so many books that they're trying to publish that you're just sitting in line?
I think their processes are so convoluted and old school. It just takes them forever to get it done. And you know, companies that are primarily internet based that do this for a living have, you know, made the process so much faster than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to get traditionally published, but you want to get your book on the market as soon as possible, but they're going to offer you a ginormous advance, you know, $50,000. Is it worth it to you to wait a year or two to get your book on the market for 50 grand? I'd say, yeah, okay. Yeah, I'd do that. But if they're only offering you like $2,000 advance or no advance, me personally, I would prefer to self-publish and get my book on the market and start making money now versus waiting a year or two for a company that, oh, another thing, traditional publishers, they expect authors to do virtually all of their own marketing now. Mm-hmm. You aren't going to, unless your name is Stephen King or Grisham, you're not going on a book tour. Mm-hmm. They're not going to run, you know, ads on TV for your book. They're not going to, you know, put you on a panel at some big, you know, writing convention or something.
Sign you up for a bunch of book signings all over the country.
Well, yeah. how it works is that they throw a bunch of new books out every year. I mean, a bunch. I'm talking, you know, maybe a couple dozen, you know, of unknowns. Unknown mm-hmm. authors. They devote all of their money to promoting their celebrity authors. Mm. And they hope that at least one of those books by an unknown author takes off.
I see.
That year. Yeah. So they're spending their money on, you know, ads for Stephen King, not for your book.
I'm curious because you keep using the word advance when it comes to the payment that you get from a traditional publisher. Mm-hmm. So does that mean that basically when they've paid you that, you have to sell X number of books to make up for that before you start making any more money. Mm-hmm. Am I correct on that?
And I'll be completely transparent with how my advance went with St. Martin's Press. Mm-hmm. Again, it was a co-authored book, and we were paid $60,000 up front. Now, she and I would not get another dime until we would have earned $60,000 in royalties.
Yeah.
The last statement I looked at, we had only earned $845. That was years into the process. So usually the advance you get is the only money you're going to get.
I can't imagine that wouldn't be kind of typical. I mean, unless you are a big name, you know, a famous author, but That's the risk that they're taking, is whatever money they pay you, they're hoping you're going to at least make that much. So I would think that's something that if you're a new author and you're hoping to get traditionally published, you have to take that into account, is you have to convince, or your agent has to convince this publisher of how many books you're going to sell before they're going to pay you for it.
Well, with ours, our book had been previously self-published mm-hmm. through writersweekly.com and, of course, BookLocker at the time. And we sold thousands and thousands of copies.
Okay.
I was able to provide these sales numbers to St. Martin's Press, say, look how much we've sold in the last year. We're raking in the dough. So they agreed, $60,000 advance. However, because of the editor, it took 2 years for that book to get to market. Now, the book was called How to Publish and Promote Online. It had lots of links in it.
Things change. Yeah.
Lots and lots of links. 2 years later, half the book was irrelevant. And in fact, it was so embarrassing that my co-author and I, we wouldn't promote the book because it was a mess. I mean, they just completely mucked up the whole process.
So when you were promoting it through BookLocker and Writers Weekly, it was a current subject.
Also, it was an ebook only because we would constantly update those links.
Sure.
Just to make sure the book stayed relevant. Well, St. Martin's Press didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And it was embarrassing when the book came out.
Okay. Anything else that you want to cover about the publishing process?
I think that pretty much covers it. But I would encourage authors who have author anxiety, you know, you're not the only one. If you don't have author anxiety, I think there's something wrong with you. Really, honestly. Yeah. I still get nervous when I put a new book on the market. Ooh, what are people going to say? I don't know. So.
All right. And I would encourage anybody that if you have any kind of questions or any subjects you'd like to hear on one of our future podcasts, give us a shout. Angela, how can they reach us?
Writersweekly.com/podcast. And you can click on the Contact Us button at the top of the page, and that will go directly to me.
And we'd love to hear what you'd like to hear about.
Yeah.
Well, that wraps it up for this week. We appreciate everybody listening to us. If you can, give us a 5-star rating on that app that you're listening to us on. If you're on YouTube, click that like and subscribe button. That helps get us deeper into the algorithm so that more people can hear this podcast. And again, writersweekly.com/podcast is where you can hear all of our episodes on computer. Angela, it's been a pleasure again.
It's been a pleasure. Yeah.
All right.
Let's go check on those chicken
let's
chicks.
Go check
let's
those
check on
chickens.
The eggs in the incubator. See if they're cracking yet.
All right. We'll see y'all next week on the Writers Weekly podcast.
Bye, guys.